Look at your city, town, or its people the same way ever again. Stained by Blood, a murder investigation based upon a true story by private investigator Douglas J. Hagman. Using the character Mark Stiles, Hagman takes you on a journey behind the scenes where the homicide becomes a secondary to an underworld of satanic ritual abuse, child abduction, and even mind-controlled experimentation. A world dismissed as conspiracy by those who want to keep its secrets hidden. Exposing the dangers, denials, and deceptions. For 5 years, a brutal killer remained on the loose, free to kill again. As Mark struggles to navigate the maze of bizarre twists and untangle a web of deeply hidden secrets kept by some of the most powerful and influential people in his community and beyond. You may never look at your city, town, or its people the same way ever again. Stained by Blood. Order your copy of this engaging novel today at HagmanandHagman.com and click on the link. Stained by Blood.
Welcome back to this edition of the Hagman Hagman Report. Our very special guest, Mr. John Reagan. John's got an MBA. Despite his master's, he's a smart guy, in spite of that. So, you know, in part or at parties, did you ever talk to somebody with a master's degree? Wow.
Very often.
Yeah. You know, and you know how much fun at parties that could be, right? But anyway, now, despite his MBA, he's a very intelligent guy, and he's able to get across his point to normal people, people like me, people that don't like to really deal with numbers. And after today, I just don't like numbers. So we're pleased to have him. His website is thefinancialstateoftheunion.com, thefinancialstateoftheunion.com. Do yourself a favor. Go over to Amazon.com and buy his book. It's a really good read. Well, it depends. Actually, buy his book and then pop over and buy Stained by Blood and then compare the two. One is, one's got like a lot of horror and gore and blood in it, and the other is my book. I'm glad you got that. All right. You see what I did there? Okay. Anyway, it's great to have John Reagan on, and portions of tonight's broadcast, again, brought to you by HealthMasters.com. That's HealthMasters.com, as well as AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com. You want to know about survival preparation products? AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com. Visit AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com and take advantage of their various specials. And they are a Christian-owned, veteran-owned company. Just a tremendous company that has great products, great food. We eat their canned food here in the studio ourselves, in no emergency. We eat dried fruit, and Joe and I wrestle for it. But that's what we do. But again, our guest tonight, John Reagan, thefinancialstateoftheunion.com. If you're listening to this at your computer, definitely visit thefinancialstateoftheunion.com. And during the break, John was sharing some pretty scary stuff with us. But before we get to John, or before we get to that other stuff that I'm about ready to go into fetal position. Before we get to the new stuff, you said, yeah, I got to answer your question first. So we're going to kick it back to you. John, again, thanks for being with us. And go ahead.
Oh, since we're having so much fun with Wabbit Twails today, let me just throw one little thing out. You're talking about 9/11. I haven't had a chance to listen to Dr. Brewer on the Common Sense Show on that, but I found an interesting coincidence dealing with 9/11.
Okay.
And so like I say, you know, I worked at the Pentagon for 2.5 years, and I probably knew this, but back in the 80s, this didn't matter. The Pentagon, the groundbreaking took place September 11th, 1940.
Wow, that's a fact that I've never learned.
And that was roughly 2 months before Pearl Harbor.
Yep. And actually, the dates, the occult dates in there, my goodness. Ted talked about it last night. Just the dates, the star, the planetary alignment. And people might think, oh, this is just crazy talk. Well, you know what? Maybe to us it is, but don't mock that which you don't believe. Other people believe in this stuff. Other people believe in, you know, the planetary alignment and the, that, you know, it means things. So look at the astrologers and such. So, but interesting non-coincidence. 9/11. John, did you work at the Pentagon during 9/11?
Yes, not during 9/11. I got there in late 85 and was there through early 88.
Okay.
The second Reagan term.
Okay.
And let me go ahead and say this while we're on on another rabbit hole. My life was still, it's kind of hard to call my life normal, but somewhat so up until that point. I had a top secret clearance as soon as my initial investigation came through up until that point. And then when I went to the Pentagon, the nuclear world's an above top secret world. And then specifically, one of the, I'll try to explain it. You might have read about Hillary's emails, and some of them were the special access programs, SI and TK.
Yes.
Signals intelligence and talent keyhole.
I knew about the SI, yeah, but TK I wasn't familiar with. But go ahead.
That's the spy satellites.
Uh-huh.
And I got to go a lot of cool places. I got to go to the White House Situation Room. I got to go to the NSA. I got to see one of the flying command posts. I got to see the Situation Room in the State Department, the NMCC, National Military Command and Control Center, the Pentagon. I also had several trips to the alternate National Military Command and Control Center, also known as Site R. That's inside a mountain in Pennsylvania. Just across the border from Camp David.
Right, right. I think our audience knows that. What is Mount Weather, right?
No.
Okay.
Mount Weather is another facility.
Oh.
So
did you say the name of it? Raven Rock? Is that what you said?
Yes. Site R, S-I-T-E hyphen R, is what you can search on. And I actually found out more on the internet than I did from being there several times. The only thing that may be suspicious, I don't know about the underground transportation stuff. If it existed then or exists now, I can't say. I saw no evidence of it, but again, those types of things could be hidden.
Sure.
But as far as how it's built, it's not quite the same as Cheyenne Mountain. But there's a lot of similarities. And I always thought it was funny. When you go in and out of the mountain, you have to go through a metal detector, and they'll go through your briefcase unless you have a courier pass. But at the Pentagon, which has the same classified material, you can walk in and out all day long without being searched.
Interesting. Okay.
And,
wow.
Just some more trivia for you. The Washington-Moscow hotline, which in the movies you always see as a red phone on the president's desk, that's not the case. The hotline is in the Pentagon, in the command control center, and it's not a phone. While I was there, they were in the middle of testing the replacement. Up until that point, it was teletype, and they're switching over to computers. And what they would do is they would send encyclopedia articles back and forth, something that's, non-inflammatory. So it was a
right.
Nice learning experience on both ends for people. But it's, when anybody talks about the red phone in the White House, no, that's not it.
I was in the Oval Office looking for the red phone. In fact, the proof of that is on my personal Facebook page, and people said, yeah, that's a, it was weird. I just had some fun, and that was not photo, folks. It was not photoshopped. I was actually in well, an Oval Office that looked like the Oval Office, right? And some people say, ah, you know, tell us, I do have to wait until your program tonight. That was at when we were in Dallas at the Bush Library. They have a mock-up of that Oval Office. So there, I broke the suspense. But I was looking for the red phone and the nuke button when I was there, and I was telling people to get out of my way.
There was a button.
Yeah, there was a button, all right. There's a couple of them. But anyway.
Now, with my clearance, I ended up talking to a lot of Intel-type people. And one of the things I learned is that if you know too much, that could have an impact on your life expectancy, if you know what I mean. And it got
you're welcome to elaborate if you want.
I read the obituaries differently. Not that I believe that it was a common practice, but undoubtedly it did happen. And like I say, this is the good old days during the second Reagan term. I can just imagine what it's like today. And I got to a point where I really had to make a decision, and I decided I just couldn't keep on selling my soul on the installment plan anymore.
Mm.
So after 8.5 years, I'd planned on, you know, making a career, and after 20, you get retirement. And so I left. And
right.
For the first year that I'd left, I'd wondered, you know, did I learn too much? And every time I went out, I was always looking in my rearview mirror. And once I made it past the first year, I figured I was okay. Now I know that where I was in the above top secret world was pretty benign. And one of the people that I've had an opportunity to spend time with, being with USA Preparers, is Dr. Richard Allen Miller, who was the lead physicist for the United States Navy. This was at a time before I was there. And one of the things that I'd found on the internet was talk about a Nazi base in Antarctica, and Steve Quayle's done a good job on this too. But Dr. Miller actually went to that base. He was specifically tasked with trying to figure out how the bioluminescence on the wall worked. And he said it's quite a sight to be there, because when you look up, the ceiling of the cavern is a mile over your head.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Hold the phone, guys. We're gonna push the talk of money aside here a minute. We gotta have a conversation. All right. Huh?
And I really didn't prepare for this type of conversation tonight, but Dr. Miller also put up a YouTube that was a Russian documentary. And this goes back to when Admiral Byrd led a joint U.S.-Russian task force, this was after World War II, to Antarctica. And you know, ships got heavily damaged, people got killed, and in part of the clip it looks like something saucer-shaped was moving pretty fast by the carrier or the battleship, whichever they had there.
Have you talked to Steve Quayle about this at all? I mean, I got to ask you. Man, okay.
And, you know, as interesting as that is, he talked about another thing. And when you're at that high level, and this is he was a GS-18. And when you're at the 3- and 4-star level, you're treated a little differently. When you're on the peon level, you know, I was just a captain in the basement of the Pentagon, you're held to the standard of need to know. So even if you have the security clearance, you don't necessarily get access. Well, when you're at that high level, you have what's called vault access, which means you get to walk into the vault and look at whatever you want. And he talked about
I want one of those. Sign me up for one of them things. All right.
Yeah, talk about not sleeping. He came across a report about a joint U.S.-Soviet manned flight to Mars in the early 60s.
Yeah, you know, I do believe that we are so far ahead, and in all seriousness, after talking with Steve Quayle, and Steve has talked to these 3- and 4-star people, maybe person or maybe two people. I don't really know. And, yeah, apparently there's some things we're not privy to, obviously. And, we're delving into that area right now. You have any reason not to believe stuff like this? I mean, based on your experience?
I've got enough other pieces that I would tend to believe it. And what I can point people to, I don't know, it's been posted online. One of the speakers at the Secret Space Program Conference, this was held in Austin, I think it was like October 31st last year. And I can't remember his name right off, but this guy used to be AFOSI, that's Air Force Office of Special Investigations. So he's a professional investigator. And he started researching, and he started following this trail back to the Second Reich. And
okay, when you say the Second Reich, what are you referring to specifically? Because there's been some issues, or there's some people, defining that Second Reich differently. So what do you mean by that?
Well, the First Reich, basically Holy Roman Empire.
Right.
The Second Reich, this was in the 1800s.
All right.
I think it was probably even before the Civil War. In fact, it had to be. And he talks about these aircraft keep in mind, this is way before Wright Brothers.
Right. Correct.
That could travel across the continent in a matter of hours. And apparently, one of these guys went and talked to Lincoln and his Secretary of War, and they were getting ready to go to Congress to get funds authorized when the Secretary of War shut it down, supposedly. And he had some conjecture that this may have been the first Black Ops project.
You said Lincoln. You mean
Lincoln.
Like Abe Lincoln?
Abe Lincoln.
An aircraft we're talking?
Yes. And there's also drawings of something that looks a little bit like the Third Reich Nazi Bell.
Right. Okay. That's an interesting topic, too.
And it is believed that they actually had anti-gravity technology before the turn of the century.
Yeah.
Man. Wait a second. I could just picture Lincoln being really hacked off that they lost his luggage. Okay, I'm sorry. Anyway.
No, we talked about this quite a bit on the show, and I think we were talking about it before the show. The I know Eric, the tech, and I were talking about how whatever's put out there in the mainstream, and Billy Crone talked about this, and many others do, the amount of years ahead the government and the elite are technologically far supersedes that of what they show in everyday life and in the mainstream, and even for new inventions and technology. They're, as you would say, light years ahead of us, 50 to 100 years.
Well, even more.
Yeah.
I mean...
Well, while I was living in the Ozarks, I had an opportunity to go to the 2012 Prophecy Summit in Branson. And at the time, the only speaker that I knew was Tom Horn, who does a great job on transhumanism.
Yes.
The only other name I recognized was Chuck Missler, but I really wasn't familiar with his work. And then a lot of other cool people, two of which were L.A. Marzulli and Russ Dizdar. And before going to that conference, I thought I was going to probably be a little on the dull side, people going into the Bible and having their opinions. Nothing like that. And if you had bet me ahead of time, what's the last thing you're going to hear about at this prophecy summit? And if they said, how about Nazi flying saucers? I'd say, okay, I'll take you up on that bet. And boy, would I have lost. I think it was actually L.A. that did that presentation. There's two different Nazi flying saucer programs, and these were not spacecraft, they were aircraft. Because when you look at the pictures, they had windows and open windows and machine guns pointing at them and the whole thing. And each of those came about through separate witch lines.
You know, witch lines?
Witch lines. One was the real society, and so this was channeled technology.
Wow.
And you know, my time in the Air Force and all of that, never did I have any indication of the occult nature of World War II. And with what I know now, you know, I'm just having to look at so many things so differently. And what all I learned at the Prophecy Summit, I mean, it was 2 or 3 months before my brain was able to kind of assimilate it all.
You know, isn't it interesting how we are led to disclosure? And that word disclosure has different meanings to different people. And, of course, the bigger connotation of disclosure is ultimate disclosure at some point in the future. But you know, it's interesting because I was introduced before I even knew what satanic ritual abuse was and satanic crimes, back in the back when I investigated the murder of my uncle. All right. Now, having said that, I didn't know what it was, and I was dealing with it. So, and here you are at the Pentagon, and perhaps you're maybe an arm's length away from, or maybe that's, I don't know, or you're just on the periphery of things like you're talking about. I mean, but then at some point we all kind of get hit with this disclosure, or we all embrace disclosure, or know that, hey, there's stuff going on that we didn't know about. And, I mean, we knew stuff didn't, it was going on we didn't know about, but the enormity of what we're talking about here. I mean, consider the enormity of this. But wow.
Yeah, it's kind of like when you live in an apartment, you might have an idea of what's going on upstairs. You don't have a full picture of it. And I was noticing that things kind of had a life of their own. And that's really, looking back, what I was probably noticing was the satanic presence. And I could see that what the people see, the facade of the Constitution, you know, the three branches of government.
Right.
There was some control there, but that's not where all the control was. And like I said, of course, I know a whole heck of a lot more now.
Isn't this interesting? You come on to talk about the financial state of the economy, and we're talking about things that really your experience goes back into the mid-80s. And, you know, it's just, to me, this is fascinating. We're having a conversation, folks, with John Reagan. His website, thefinancialstateoftheunion.com. His book, The Financial State of the Union, Book 1, Unspinning the Spin. But we're also talking about some pretty enormous subjects, pretty big-time subjects here. And dragging him into rabbit trails that necessarily he was not prepared to go. But, you know, he's good-natured and going down these rabbit trails. So, you know, we're talking about this for a reason, John. We really are.
I guess let's get into some doom porn.
some may call it that. I call it awareness, you know, level of awareness here. Go ahead.
And let me start off with a little bit out of Matthew 24. You know, Jesus is talking about when are you coming? You know, they want to know, and even Jesus didn't know. And you asked the question about time. You know, when is this collapse going to happen? And I can give you a season, much like Jesus does. I can't give you the exact time. But he goes in and saying, you know, you'll hear of wars and rumors of wars. You're going to see, you know, famine and pestilences and earthquakes in diverse places. And what comes right after that is what can, kind of puts the hairs on the back of my neck up. And these are the beginning of sorrow. That's right. The good old days. You know? And I really believe, and we'll be getting into this, you know, that we'll be seeing famines of biblical proportions. The word pestilences, we need to say pandemic to bring it up into modern terms. And it's not just what's going around in humans. There's so much affecting the plant life as well. You know, olive oil is going up because there's this disease affecting the trees in Spain and Italy. Bananas may go extinct because of a fungus. Vanilla for ice cream has gone up 150% because of the problems in Madagascar. I mean, it's just all over the place. And of course, then there's the earthquakes. And, you know, some people wonder if those are man-made or not. You know, you can even take side trips into Planet X or the Dark Star. And I still can't tell whether or not it's real, but we are seeing some of the effects that we would expect with the volcanoes and earthquakes. And, yeah, so if we're talking doom porn, I think we're in pretty good company here.
While we're off the...
Wait a second. Then I'm going to turn it to you. We had a situation where... did you see where the swarm of bees attacked the mosque in Arizona and then another place? And they could have been hornets, and, of course, there are references to the Bible. And then, of course, 13 bald eagles suddenly... And now we're going back to the day of Scalia's death. 13 bald eagles found in Maryland, dead. Anyway.
Yeah, so that was weird.
Right, and gosh, while we're talking environment here, why don't I just go ahead and throw in Fukushima?
That's where I was going to ask you about, so let's do it.
Back on December 14th, I reported on an item I found where the government released some reports on Fukushima. And these were weekly activity reports, started the 18th, a week after the event. And this first batch went through April, so it's those first few weeks of what happened. And in there, you also find out that, you know, the resident in chief and the witch in the state house there were both briefed on it. Of course, they didn't bother telling any of us.
Right.
And we were just... Yes, go ahead.
The reason behind not telling, is that a... you know, we hear about the population reduction eugenics programs. Was this just another example of not panicking the people or not caring about the people?
It's kind of hard to tell.
Okay.
But up until I made this report, we've talked about Fukushima a lot on USA Prepares, and part of that discussion was, you know, we really hope there's not an earthquake, a big one, because if those spent fuel pools go, we're in a world of hurts. Well, in that very first report on 318, and these reports were, they said they were classified, but they were marked for official use only, and just to, for people that don't have the security clearance background, for official use only, that's what the base phone book is. You don't even lock these things up. That's how low level this is. From there, you go to classified.
Right, right. John, I just want to tell people we get FOUO documents, LEO documents all the time. Okay, for official use only. It's almost meaningless, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like I say, it's for official use, but it's not considered a security, you know, cause damage to national security if it's released. So these were just for official use only documents. And in the very first one, it says that these are the spent fuel pools. 100% of the radiation in pool 1, 50% of pool 2, and 25% of pool 1 were released into the atmosphere.
That's startling.
So after that, I'd made a series of 8 special reports, 8 hours worth on USA Prepares, and that only got me through about a third of the history that I was going through, because given that piece of information, now we can look back, and instead of making conjecture on some things, now that we know the radiation that was out there, we can be certain on more things.
Oh, do tell. What can we be certain on? I mean, I don't know. All right. What do we know?
Well, things like, you know, the stories came out about the USS Reagan and how it got hit by a lot of radiation, stories of people, you know, diarrhea, you know, in the hallways, you know, can't control themselves, very severe acute radiation poisoning type symptoms. And it took quite a while for them to get the radiation out. In fact, there's several ships that apparently still have some levels of radiation, especially in normally inaccessible areas. But of course, you know, they don't want to help the people that they put in harm's way.
You know, then, that's sad. I mean, that whole situation is extremely sad because we're talking about people's moms and dads and sons and daughters, and we're talking about human beings, and we're talking about some government bureaucracy that could care less about us, obviously. And, you know, you might say, well, Doug, why does that surprise you? No, it doesn't. It just angers me, I suppose. You know, I mean, really.
And I hear reports out of the Pacific Northwest, you know, there's dead trees there. And not only are there dead trees, there's no animals, no insects, and apparently there's not even bacteria and fungus because nothing's eating the dead trees.
Robots can't even go in there.
Well, no, in Fukushima, nice how about Pacific Northwest. Oh, but, yeah, sorry. Yeah. Wow.
So it's much like the area around Chernobyl.
In America. I mean, think about that.
Well, it's worse than that. And
okay.
If you go back to Hour one of USA Prepares this last Thursday, Vincent was talking about one of our instructors was in the Los Angeles area, and he was taking readings all over the place, and go like to Walmart and check out the carpet, and it was over 1,000 counts per minute. Normal background radiation should be single digit to low double digit counts per minute.
Right, right.
And he also checked foodstuffs, and actually one of the lower counts was on butter. And that was around 400 counts per minute.
I have actually seen, I was in one supermarket, that I watched somebody with one of the, I want to say a Nuke Alert or something similar, a device similar to that. And I did ask this gentleman the question, what are you doing? And he said, checking radiation levels. And I thought, wow, you know, okay. Even in our area, of course, you know, the 1,000-mile salad, and of course, you don't know where the food comes from necessarily. So, all right. But, so... But when was this? I mean, was this like recently or?
Yeah, this was like within the last week or so.
Okay.
And among the pieces of you know, trivia that I learned along the way, the place in the United States that got hit with the most amount of radiation from Fukushima was the east coast of Florida.
East coast of Florida.
Wait a second. Now, how is that possible?
That's the way the jet stream went.
All right. I have to... And, folks, think about that for a second. The east coast of Florida. You're talking about Daytona Beach? You're talking about...
Miami?
Okay.
And a quick lesson on radiation... You know, I remembered from school, you know, you've got the lower levels, the alpha and the beta radiation, and how alpha is so weak you can block it with a piece of paper. And when you read about them talking about radiation levels being safe, they're talking about exposure to radiation. So imagine you have this block of radiation sitting in the room with you. Depending on the distance and what's between you and it, you're going to get a certain dosage. And you can read what the symptoms are depending on how much dosage you get over a certain period of time. And that's typically all that is talked about when you hear radiation in Fukushima. However, when you turn around and you inhale or ingest that alpha radiation, it is many, many times more damaging.
Okay. Well, you know, John, this goes to my bigger question, I suppose, is why, and maybe you can't answer this, and if you can, I certainly understand, because I certainly can't answer this, but why aren't we being told about this? Why aren't we being told the truth about this? Is it because, well, why?
Okay, part of it, and this gets into the financial part as well, if we could really wake up everybody and they knew what the situation was, that would make the collapse happen sooner than it's going to anyway. Because people realize that...
Well, we're kind of, pardon the expression, but we're kind of screwed anyway, right? I mean...
We are. And if you look back, you know, Tokyo should have been evacuated. But when you have, I think it's, you know, 40 million people there, it takes time, and it takes, in that case, probably over $1 trillion to try and relocate. And where are you going to relocate them to? There's no infrastructure set up to relocate that number of people to. And we may be looking at a similar situation, not because of radiation, here in the United States, because of the drought in California. If that water level gets down so far where it can't support, you know, the millions of people there, we're looking at trying to relocate roughly that amount of people. And where are you going to send them to?
Yeah, that's an interesting point. I recently read an article from an interview from the mayor of Tokyo or the prime minister of Japan, where he talked about in the days after Fukushima the prospect of evacuating the town. And they said that they, you know, wouldn't be able to do it because of the amount of people. I think it was like 55 million people, they said, estimate that they'd have to relocate. And that brings up the other points you mentioned, where, how, and, you know, they haven't done that. And we know Fukushima is still a problem. It's still leaking radiation, radioactive water still spilling back into the sea. And that's still contaminating. I mean, what have you heard on the Pacific Ocean as far as the life in the ocean? I've heard, you know, 99% of life in the Pacific Ocean has died. You know, we constantly hear stories of dead fish, dead whales, and other dead creatures in mass floating up to the shores of different nations. Do you think this is all related to Fukushima?
I think most of it is. It's possible that, my understanding, there's a red tide out there as well, and of course that's poisonous and would affect life. I've seen reports where no killer whales have survived. You know, they were born and they died off very quickly. So unless that changes, once the current killer whales die, there's not going to be any more in the Pacific.
And of course, you know, we're talking about a food chain here.
Yeah, ecosystem.
I had a pretty high-level government official, well, a government contractor, that told me that basically they didn't care anymore about the northern hemisphere that they were populating or intended to populate. They, meaning the globalists, the southern hemisphere. Have you heard anything about that? That's question one. And question two would be, has Fukushima, we understand it's a global catastrophe, or a global horror story. Has Fukushima affected the southern hemisphere as badly as the north?
Not as badly, but radiation has made it to the southern hemisphere. And I have read those reports that, you know, the elitist type families have property in the southern hemisphere. At the way things are going, I'm not really sure any place is going to give you anything long term. And in fact, I guess go back, one of the reasons I started writing those reports that's on that tab on my website, as I started looking at things and was saying, you know, you look at Matthew 24 and it's looking a whole lot like it's the season. Of course, people have thought that for the last 2,000 years. And I'm saying, okay, is there an alternative to that? And you know how there's cycles that repeat in the Bible. So I'm thinking, you know, Jesus spent 3 nights in the tomb. So we're also told that, you know, time's not the same here as in heaven, that, you know, a 1,000 years here is but a day. So we've had 2,000 years, which, you know, would suggest to me if it follows a pattern, we could maybe have another 1,000 years. And in the middle of trying to present the sides of that argument, I'm starting to see other things, whether it's Fukushima or the geoengineering that Dane Wigginton talks about, or the droughts affecting the food supply, the pestilence that I just talked about. And I'm starting to pay more attention to those places that talk about heaven and earth will pass away. And I'm actually beginning to believe that we're getting ready to hit that time.
Meaning, I mean, one can interpret this differently, I suppose, but what does that mean? Does that mean that the judgment is now, I guess?
Well, you know, from the Christian point of view, you look at what Jesus told us, you know, heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will not pass away. And I think there's a little clue in there. If what we know physically is going to be rendered, you know, unusable, there's got to be somewhere else. And that's talked about more in Revelation with, you know, the New Jerusalem coming down. And I think that's where, those that are saved will have entry to. And Chuck Missler had an interesting talk about hypercubes. And,
I heard that. Yes, and folks, if you haven't heard that, now again, this is intellectual discussion. So, you know, folks, don't freak out, you know, about talking about biblical physics. But go ahead.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about Flatland for a minute. That brings it down a few dimensions, so it might be easy for you to understand. Flatland is two dimensional, like a sheet of paper. And say there are these creatures in Flatland. They know forward, backward, left, right, but they can't understand up and down. And if you take a sphere and start passing it through that sheet of paper, all of a sudden the circle appears to them. They have no idea where it's coming from, no idea where it's going. And, you know, of course, people that witness this are considered crazy.
Right.
And we're used to three dimensions, and our minds really can't, you know, handle anything above that, because we don't have any frame of reference to to use on it.
Sure.
So these hypercubes, you know, has this extra dimension or dimensions that we don't know about. And if you bring that into our universe, it looks like a cube. And that, you know, would resemble what we see in Revelation. It gives you the dimensions. It's humongous. So again, you know, the Bible says, you know, nobody gets to Father except by Jesus. So if you're, you know, a body of the believers, and the way it reads to me, if you are into this New Jerusalem, this cube, then to me it seems logical that, you know, that cube is then taken out of this universe, and woe be unto you if you're not on board.
See, you just turned doomborn into salvation. I mean, into something happy. Not you know, I mean, for the believers, the body of the church, the body of the remnant, the believers, the people who understand what's going on, and to all members of our audience, you know, rejoice, because this is, we will be, I mean, we rejoice, because time is short. Just even though we're going to have some bumps, some bruises, obviously it's going to be a bumpy road, one heck of a ride. I mean, we all should rejoice because we know where we're headed. And don't forget, folks, we're spiritual beings with an earthly body, not the other way around. So God bless you for kind of framing it that way. Amidst all the doom, we have hope.
And I feel sorry for people that don't have faith, because even the people that have faith are going to have a rough time.
Yeah. Yeah, and I understand that. And it's going to be, you know, we deal, and I hear from so many people who are just so afraid. And I think that's, you know what, John? And again, folks, we're just having a conversation. Our guest is John Reagan. His website, thefinancialstateoftheunion.com. He certainly didn't sign up for this this conversation, but we're glad to have him for it. You know, I just see so many people who are saying, oh my goodness, you know, we can't talk about this because it has a lot of, you know, I mean, it's, we needn't talk about this. It scares people unnecessarily. It frightens people. I feel sorry for those people who look at the situation in that fashion, because they're not rooted, to me, they're not rooted deeply in their faith. And you know what? I was like that probably 10, 15 years ago. Frankly, okay? I mean, I didn't understand the larger picture as I do now. So, again, rejoice, folks, because you were born for this time. You've got a job to do. We all have jobs to do, our heavenly tasks. And there's no time for you to be afraid. And there's no need for you to be afraid, especially if you believe as we believe. I mean, if you believe that in salvation and in our Lord and Savior, then of course we know where we're going. I mean, what are they going to do to you here? You know, in your skin suit, in your flesh suit, nothing. I mean, what can they do? We know where we're headed with our resurrection bodies and such. And I take a lot of comfort in that. What's the worst that can happen to you? They're going to kill you? You know, I mean, they, meaning the globalists. So maybe I'm making too light of it, and I guess and I don't want to dominate the conversation. But again, you know, anyone who says, well, this is just unnecessarily scaring people, man, is your faith that fragile? But anyway, John, I'm going to turn it back over to you. Interesting stuff. Did we miss anything about Fukushima that you want to share? Anything more?
Well, that could, like I said, that one could go on for hours, too. Let me make another jump. they had WrestleMania here in Dallas over the weekend at AT&T Stadium. The largest WrestleMania crowd ever, 101,000 people. And, you know, you look at where we were, you know, a couple of weekends ago. Less than 1% of the people that went to WrestleMania is what we had at the Hear the Watchman conference. Can you imagine what this country would be like if we had 101,000 screaming fans for Jesus?
You know, we just might see a revival then. Yeah. And how many people at that WrestleMania event you know, when you look back and you look, it's kind of like when I was flying back, and I don't like to fly because of the TSA, but I'm flying back and I'm looking out the window, John. I'm looking at this huge country, and it's from that view that I like to look at things, because you get a bigger picture. You can see, you know, cities and you can see things a lot clearer from 35,000 feet than you can, you know, at ground level. So, having said that, yeah, I mean, I'm just imagine how many of those people that went to that WrestleMania event are informed, or are they just deceived and distracted?
I remember how it was first described to me back in the 90s during the early Clinton administration. It's three words that actually come from the Roman Empire: bread and circuses.
That's right.
So, yep. So long as people have something to eat, whether it's good for them or not, and so long as they have entertainment, and boy, with the internet, do we have all kinds of entertainment, you can pretty much do what you want to with the people.
And we're seeing that, John, we're seeing that in this election cycle. I truly believe this election business 24/7. That's all you hear about Trump, Kasich, and Cruz, and Clinton, and Sanders. And I, folks, I truly believe, too, that we're going to see a big surprise coming this summer. And I don't think I don't think what we're seeing right now is actually what we're going to get on the other side of the conventions this summer, and if we make it that far, which kind of is a nice segue, kind of circles back around. John, I mean, why hasn't the economy collapsed yet?
Yeah.
You know, is it because why hasn't it collapsed yet?
The short answer is they don't want it to yet. And when you look back, people have been saying since the 80s that, you know, the economy is going to collapse. And the reason that it hasn't until now is that we're in a position that's never happened before in the world, in that every currency is fiat currency, meaning that it's monopoly money, it's paper. The way the government describes it, the dollar is backed by the full faith and credit of the United States. And that's actually one of the true statements they make. Because what's faith? You believe in it. So long as you believe the dollar has value, it has value. The other side of that is credit. That's not the same thing as debt. You have to think like a credit line. Your credit line can be cut off, it can be reduced. But so long as people are willing to lend you money, then you've got credit. So our dollar, truthfully, is backed by faith and credit.
What about the petrodollar, though? What about oil? I mean, or when I say petrodollar, what about the military ability, the military to make sure the oil flow?
That's part of the picture of why we haven't collapsed. When the petroleum-producing countries start accepting, and this already started but not full force yet, accepting other currency and gold in exchange for oil, that's when our dollar, you know, at least 50% overnight, losing the value. It's something we haven't had to deal with because in our lives, oil has always been priced in dollars, which has been our currency. Every other country has had to exchange their currency into dollars to get oil. That's going to change. And there's also been this debt because that there's been no reckoning, there's been no tie to anything natural, and I'd have to this is one of the resource links for today, the return to the Yellow Brick Road, what it would take to return to a gold standard and what that would mean for either the price of gold or the value of currency. And you know, it's probably well beyond what you think it would be. I don't have time before the break to walk you through that one.
No, but I think maybe you might want to touch on that on the other side.
Yeah, folks, stay with us. We're talking with author John Reagan, and much more than an author.
He's an all-around nice guy, and he's got an MBA, and despite that, we can understand him, okay?
He also hosts a show on USAPrepares.com radio at 10 a.m. Central Time on Monday morning.
Yeah, he's an instructor with Vince Minnelli. Vince Minnelli is a great guy. He's a great talk radio host.
Yeah,
he's one of the instructors. Yeah, yeah. And
let me just correct a little bit. I'm a guest, occasional guest host, and that's at 9 o'clock Central Time, 9 to 11.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we can't tell time here. See, the real time is Eastern time. Everything else is just kind of, you know, it's not the real time. That's how we look at things. But, yeah, you do a good job, and your segments are always popular. You talk about the economy and all kinds of fun things like that. And despite the dullity, despite how dull numbers could be in your book, and I've got to give you a lot of credit, The Financial State of the Union, Book 1. You really make it come alive and make it understandable. Folks, go to Amazon. The Financial State of the Union, Book 1, Unspinning the Spin by John Reagan. Definitely add it to your library.
Stay with us. We'll be right back for our third and final hour on this Monday edition of the Hagman & Hagman Report with our guest, Mr. John Reagan.
This is the Global Star Radio Network.